Hello and welcome to Chinwag. I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
And as promised, Chinwaggers, here's a little extra bonus wag for your listening enjoyment.
Bonus.
See you on the other side, waggers.
Do you remember, Paul, we used to do these like bits? Like, we used to do bits, like when we did that play together.
Yes.
And Paul used to get me laughing so hard. There was one, like, play that we wanted to do so badly. I mean, all the
time
in
the world. Right, to write our own play.
We're like, and the concept was, it was like a Victorian sitting room sort of drama about sort of like a sort of an heiress type family that would be like on stage. And then a young sort of promising inventor.
I don't remember this, by the way.
You
this is amazing.
You used to riff on it forever. And it was like a young promising inventor who was wanting the hand, you know, wanting to sort of ask the father for the daughter's hand in marriage. Yes. But again, sort of very sort of, you know, Washington Square kind of, you know, townhouse setting. That would be the setting of the play.
Yeah.
But the joke was that he would always be like predicting things. He'd be like, and he'd be like, I'm telling you, this could work, you know? And so it'd be like, one day man will be able to speak into a tube. So he's like predicting the telephone or
yes,
like,
right.
I tell you, one day you will be able to take a great big dirigible.
Yes. And I remember what I would say
balloon,
all the time.
To the moon.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And I remember the catchphrase was, you may depend upon it, sir, that someday you may depend upon it.
Yeah. Yes. And the father didn't want him to marry the...
Yes. The father would go, you're a loon, you're crazy, get out. And the guy would go,
crazy.
You may depend upon it, sir.
There's no way you're going to marry my daughter.
Exactly. Someday, yes, someday people will have little devices in their hands to take pictures and make telephone calls. Yeah, it was all like just ridiculous. We used to spend a fuck ton of time screwing around doing that.
It just
backstage.
Made me laugh so hard, that concept of predicting future things like the telephone, but it's a tube that goes around the world that you shout into. It's always like slightly wrong.
Slightly wrong.
Slightly, it's like,
so totally
you'll be able,
wrong.
To, be able to take a balloon to the moon. Like,
yes, that's right. That's right. A balloon
and
to the moon.
The daughter being like, but father, I'm telling you, some of his theories sound crazy.
He's a genius.
But he's a genius.
Yes, exactly. You don't understand. Roderick is a genius. Yeah, it was all that kind of shit.
Roderick is a genius, Papa.
We used to fucking, Justin and I would fuck around a lot back. I mean, we fucked around. It was just epic how much we fucked around. And it was a...
How did you first meet?
We met on this thing.
Oh, this is a show. Okay.
It was a play. It was a Chekhov. It was a Chekhov play.
Wow.
My God.
Yes. Super depressing.
Talk about time. That was the whole thing. Who was the actor that played? You were Andre. Beautiful portrayal.
Yes,
Andre, by the way. Heartbreaking. Right. I used to go every night.
The brother. The
when
brother.
I was off stage and go watch Paul, he had this monologue that was incredible.
Please.
Which was just anyway. Sorry, not to
God
to
bless
your
you.
Horn.
Somebody needs to, Justin.
But yeah, there was a Chekhov. It's, you know, the comedies of Chekhov.
Did somebody have a thing about time in that? Did somebody talk about the time?
Yeah, remember there was one guy, one character in the play who's always checking his watch. Like, we have to, you know, he's always tapping his watch. We've got to go here. We've got to go there.
The school teacher. There's the school teacher in it.
Yeah, and he was married to Natasha.
One thing I'm learning is that Justin has a much better memory than Paul has. That's pretty clear from this conversation.
What's interesting is, Justin, we're probably 4 years apart, right?
Yeah.
We're 4 years. I think we're about 4 years apart.
Probably.
You look the same. I look like I'm 87.
That's not true,
Paul. Look at the two of us. Well, I mean, come on. Look at this. Look at this. You look absolutely, you look exactly the same.
It's all that meditation.
It's, well, it might be.
I don't know about that. I have a bag of nerves up in here. Like, I'm just pickling myself on anxiety.
I remember that being a kind of watershed for me, that doing that play, because we fucked around so much in a really wonderful way. And that it was, for me, it kind of got...
It was really fun.
It was really fun. And it was, I don't know if it was the greatest production in the world or whatever, but we had a really good time. And it got me over the hump of being too serious about theater and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
That's
yes.
Cool.
Yes, it did.
That's interesting. I think there's a period of... Well, I remember, I mean, you were... That was such a really interesting moment in your career... Not to do a retrospective on your life and career, but it was, I mean, you had just done Private Parts.
Yes,
and it came out while came out while we were doing the play, and your life kind of changed overnight. And I remember not in the best way, because I remember you getting really upset, like not upset, but you were like kind of just, A, we were doing the most depressing play on earth. So that was sort of walking with all of us. And you had kind of like, it was the first time you sort of really popped into the culture. Playing Pig Vomit. And I remember you coming in one day and the movie had just been out a couple of weeks and you were like, I can't handle it anymore. Yeah, you were kind of, you said, I can't handle it anymore. And I go, what? Oh. You go, every fucking truck driver is just screaming at me, Pig Vomit. Hey, oh, Pig shit. Vomit. And so it was like that thing where,
amazing.
And you didn't like, you were just like, this is fucking, like, what did I sign up for? I mean, and they're all like, obviously Stern fans that were like listening to it in their truck.
Yeah, totally, you know, totally.
You know, 38th Street. And you were like, ugh. You know, and I think it was the first time that membrane had sort of been pierced from private person to private person.
For sure. That's interesting. But I definitely got over that hump. But I think, that's so interesting. I remember that happened. But what I remember is more, maybe the play then became some sort of refuge in some way. Because I remember, even though it was something that I felt sort of like, wow, are we really like fucking around on stage like this? Wow, I guess we are.
Well, we started to, that's the thing. I mean, in our defense, it's not like we were like not taking it seriously. It was a long running show.
Yes.
And as they all are. And we were all tired. And our attendance was dropping a little bit towards the end. And I think it became, and we were so familiar with the play at that point that you kind of, you know, I remember we started sort of pranking each other a little bit, or we'd be like, try and work in this word. And, you know.
And that was definitely like kind of helpful to me, I think.
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was kind of breaking apart the whole seriousness of the thing, of all of it. And probably, I don't remember it, but probably because I was like, oh, God. Coming in, and it was like it gave me some sort of funny, weird.
No, it was like winter in New York, and we were all the color of martini olives, and we were just tired and exhausted. and we, you know, and I just, but I do remember it was like the saving grace was because we all had large chunks of time not on stage. It was that long. I think there were two intermissions in that show.
It's a long
and so
play.
We had lots of time to like goof around backstage. You know, once we were over sort of opening night jitters and all that, you know, then it became kind of like, you know, and it was a good group, you know, me, you, Straight Theron, like we were all laughing hard. And it was just, the bits were so, you used to do a bit on, there was like a commercial you used to do, like a fake commercial you used to do. It was like a handlebar mustache, kind of like a Ferrell's. And you were like, come on down to Bullshooter McClanahan's.
Bullshooter McClanahan's.
Bullshooter.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, come on down to Bullshooter McClanahan's. We've got, it was all that like, right? It was free margarita night at Bullshooter McClanahan's. It was like, it was like Beefsteak Charlie's was what it was
supposed
to be.
Yeah, it was like Beefsteak Charlie's.
It was like Beefsteak Charlie's. Yeah.
Come on down to Bullshit McClanahan.
Exactly.
There was just I know there's sometimes a ghosty theme on this. Remember there was the ghost in the theater? And
no,
you will remember this when I say
really?
We did a cast picture. There was a famous ghost in this theater that apparently used to show up. We used to joke that her name was like, Mary Jean Brickickney or something, like the bald headed. What was it?
You started the whole thing that she had an enormous bloody head.
That's right. Yes. And I'd say like, I saw the ghost.
Yes. Yes.
I saw her on the catwalk. She has an enormous bloody head. And we used to do this joke. And then somewhere around the end, we did a big cast photo, like one of those classic black and white, the entire cast, director, assistant director, blah, blah. And I'll bet you have it somewhere. You seem like you're the guy who would hold on to that. In your files or whatever. But in the photo, there was like these panes of glass and there was a ghost-like figure in the glass.
Right.
Do you remember?
Seriously?
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And
did it have a big bloody head?
Everybody was really freaked out.
Bloody head.
And you were always going, and she's got an enormous bloody head. And everybody was very freaked out. And I remember, I think there were a couple of the women in the play were particularly freaked out by it.
Yeah.
And we kept saying we were seeing them, and they kept actually claiming, because we were bullshitting. Yeah. We didn't actually see it.
We were bullshitting, like, guys, this is weird.
But you were priming them.
Yeah.
Yes. But they actually thought they'd seen it. And did somebody perform was there like an exorcism or something? Or was there,
Maybe someone came in and did like a clearing or a releasing of the ghost.
I think somebody.
And it was sincere. It wasn't a joke. It was sincere.
No. No. Somebody came in and did a sort of like cleansing of the theater to make sure that we got rid of the ghosts.
Like a sagey kind of thing, maybe with someone.
Well, theater seems very superstitious in general. Like,
absolutely.
That's the impression I'm
getting. Even just the concept of a ghost light. You know, like every night when a show goes down, someone's job is to take out a little pole with a light bulb on it and plug it in. And it's called the ghost light. And it's something to keep the stage lit to prevent ghosts.
I think that's the idea.
Prevent ghosts from returning.
It must have some practical application.
I'm sure it's a practical use. You know, so if someone comes in and has to open the theater, it's not pitch black in there, but they call it a ghost light.
That's cool.
And the idea being to keep, yes, it's cool too. If you ever go into a theater.
It's beautiful. You sort of seen it probably. When you see like movies where they're like doing a rehearsal or something, you'll see a little light in the background. And it's literally just a pole, you know, sort of like a, almost like a coat racky looking thing. And then just one naked light bulb on it.
It is a really beautiful thing. It's and it is eerie. It has an eerie quality to it. I mean, cause they're fucking eerie. Theaters are weird.
When you're in a theater alone, it is spooky. Like
it's spooky.
It's the kind of thing when everyone leaves and you know, you forgot your backpack, you want to grab it and get the hell out of there. Yeah. You're like, oh, I should have got to go back in, you know,
go back to get your backpack.
You know what I mean?
I got to get my backpack.
Oh,
no, totally.
Fuck, I forgot my backpack in the dressing room. And you're kind of going to the dressing room. You're like, oh, this is fucking weird.
There is something spooky about them. It's very strange.
Paul, let me ask you something. Do you like your family?
It's a really complicated question, Steve. I didn't realize this is where we're going to be going right now.
No, I mean, do you like seeing pictures of your family?
Yeah, sure. Pictures of my family are nice. Yes, sir.
Okay, I've got a great recommendation for you. It is the Aura frame. You've probably seen some of these before. You go to your friend's house and they have a frame on the cabinet or in the living room or whatever, and it has digital photos.
Sure. Yes.
Well, I got this thing and I set it up, super easy to set up. I basically dumped a bunch of photos from my phone right onto it. Very easy to do. Took me just minutes.
All this sounds scary to me.
No, it's incredibly easy.
It's not hard. Okay.
And basically you can put like, seems like an almost infinite amount of photos on this thing. And then you can set the parameters and it can rotate your family through like every 30 seconds.
Amazing.
And it's great because I've got pictures of my son, my family.
Cool.
My dad passed away a few years ago. I get to see him popping up every now and then. The good ghosts of your personal history coming through on this thing.
Nice. That's nice.
They have a great deal for Mother's Day, so listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ChinwagPod at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
This is interesting. I don't feel like anybody's, but you can correct me if I'm wrong here, either one of you guys. I don't feel like anybody's ever captured the feeling of what it's like to be backstage and walk on stage. And the kind of like, it's such a strange phenomenon that you have to experience. I mean, you perform, Steve, as a musician and you walk out there.
Yeah, I do it as a musician, play. Yeah.
But the whole strangeness of like, it's such a weird thing, the backstage, onstage thing, right?
The concept, yeah.
Yeah, it's an uncanny moment, that thing of walking from onstage, backstage, onstage is one of the coolest sensations that you'll ever have. You're literally moving into like two different elements. You're moving from one element to another and you're going out into this fake environment and it's so fantastic and the energy is completely different. And the fact that you can stand on stage.
Yeah, you're going into this bizarre...
Yeah.
Three-walled aquarium, not four-wall because there's one whole section of the room that you're just, it's the large section of the room that you're just pretending is not there. It's so weird.
It's so weird. And you can stand on there and look off and see the other people are outside the aquarium who are off stage, who are standing around backstage looking at you. It's so fucking bizarre. And you have these, and I always loved the moment. It's one of the principal things I miss about theater. It's so funny that I missed this, but there was always a moment
getting off stage
where I would be like on stage, where I'm on stage and I go, what the living fuck are we doing? What am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here.
I had that.
It's fantastic.
The last play I did, I remember going like, it's usually happens obviously around previews and opening night when you're most nervous, and they have done studies that, like an actor on opening night, their heart rate and their adrenaline is that of like literally an astronaut about to blast off.
That's what people say. Yeah. A fighter pilot. Yes.
Yeah. Like it's that level of stress for whatever reason. Obviously, it's not nearly as dangerous as, you know, strapping a rocket to your back. But
I don't know, Justin. I don't
you're
know.
Right, Paul.
The New York
we
Times.
We should go further up our own asses and be more self-congratulatory. Like war.
The true heroes.
I don't know, Justin. A bad review can hurt as much as a bullet.
Exactly. But yeah, it is such a bizarre, weird thing. And also just that moment, because it's a completely unextraordinary thing. When it usually dawns on me right before going on stage, and you're sitting there, you're in bizarre clothes, and you're going, I'm about to walk from this little puny dark space into this brightly lit space, and then just start saying some shit, you know, and you think, this is the weirdest thing on the planet.
The weirdest thing ever.
And I'm terrified as well, yeah.
Or it can happen. I actually think for me, it happens well into it. I've been doing it a really long time, and I'm rolling along, and suddenly it'll happen, and I'll go, what the fuck am I doing? And the extraordinary thing is, you keep fucking delivering the lines, you keep doing the thing, and your mind has divided. Your mind is like absolutely divided, and you're watching yourself doing it, but you're absolutely doing it. And nobody watching you knows the difference, but you're like, oh my God, this can't possibly be. I'm completely like fucking this up.
That's obviously when it's, and again, this is so up our ass actor bullshit, but like it is when it is the best, when you're kind of, when you have that sort of moment where it's sort of not automatic, but where it's just something is when it's like, I imagine it's similar to surfing a great wave, or you know, you're so in your body,
or improvising in music,
improvising in music, and just you're in a groove, you know, because frequently, obviously, it's not like that, you know.
It's the Zen thing, like you're in the moment, like you. Although what you're describing, Paul, is like you're actually looking at yourself.
Yeah, I'm saying the opposite because that extraordinary flow thing is amazing. When you don't remember it, you walk off stage, you're like, I don't even remember doing what I just did. You know what I mean? That's the opposite.
Well,
thing
your body really... memory is helping you get through the lines, right? I mean, you're just kind of on autopilot.
Yeah.
You're observing yourself in this meta way or something.
Yeah. The other thing that's great that I do love, and I actually love it in movies when it happens too, is when something goes wrong. And then that breaks the illusion in a different way for you on stage.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily affect the people watching it. That you'll be like, whoops, something has gone wrong. Whoops, my mustache is falling off or something.
Yeah,
or somebody completely forgot three pages of...
Or skipped ahead.
Yeah, three pages of dialogue just got skipped. Or somebody didn't come on stage. Or something happens.
Yeah, something happens.
And that's fantastic because that does the opposite thing. It almost breaks you out of it. And then... you almost start feeling it anew. You start feeling it for the first time. You're like, oh, wow, this is now I'm doing it for the first time because everything's going wrong.
And I'm
trying to recover it, which is really cool.
It's a wild thing. Yeah. And obviously, adrenaline shoots through your body in this crazy way, you know, when something, when anything that goes wrong.
Anything goes wrong.
But everything, like when you guys go on stage, like the audience, though, generally, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems like the audience wants to like you and wants to like the show. But like, if I go to a philosophy conference, everyone in the room hates you and wants to take you down. It's like the most hostile fucking place.
That's really funny.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
I guess there's an agreement, you know, they've clearly bought a ticket. They want to enjoy themselves and they want to like what it is. So there's already sort of a contract in place that you're going to do your best. They're going to behave.
And you're walking into a room in which every person has their own mandate. Everybody's
room you're talking about that you're walking into?
Like this is basically, I'm a philosophy professor. So if you do any sort of philosophy conference or like you're talking to other philosophers, it's total fucking blood sport. Everyone is there to take you down. It's and then it's brutal. And then when it's all done, everybody goes drinking and it's fine, but it's super painful.
God, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's that intellectual kind of blood sport, which frankly is what the chinwag is all about.
Exactly.
This is an intellectual blood sport that we're going through right now. It is no different than war, what we're doing right now.
Exactly.
There is zero difference. It is an absolute equal.
Oh, God, Justin, you are a treasure. Dude, you are tops. Oh, my God. What a fucking pleasure.
Man, we had fun. What a giggle we've had.
I know, man. We had a good time then.
That was fun.
Thanks, Justy. Right. Thanks
I'll
a lot,
see you again.
Man.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Adios.
See you soon, hopefully, man. Bye, man.
Bye.
Chinwag is a production of Treefort Media and Touchy Feely Films,
hosted and executive produced by Paul Giamatti and Stephen Asma. Executive producers for Treefort are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman. Dan Carey is executive producer for Touchy Feely. Our series producer is Rachel Whitley Bernstein. Original theme music by Luke Topp, with additional music by Via Mardot. Oscar Guido is our executive in charge of production. Tom Monahan is head of audio for Treefort. Audio production supervision by Matt Dyson. Editing and mixing by Jeff Neal. Animation created by Alex Sokol. Research assistance by Aiden Brooks. Lastly, for more information, go to chinwagpod.fm and find us on Instagram or TikTok at chinwagpod or on Twitter at chinwag_pod.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.